There you go. Mic up. Mic up. Yes, mic is up. Mic is up. Said to myself this morning, don't forget to switch that mic on. No more of this kind of nonsense. No more of... for 25 seconds. How you doing? Are you well? Wednesday morning, the 28th of August 2019. And it is a grey and damp and dank morning here in Salford in Greater Manchester. But it's good to be back with you. It's good to be back with you. Really enjoyed the radio show yesterday. Jordan Maxwell will, in theory, be on today's programme. In theory. Got in touch with me late last night, Jordan, and he apologised for his no-show yesterday and said he'll be with me today. Anyway, that's okay. It was a really interesting show yesterday. It was nice to throw the phone and the Skype open and to hear from some really interesting people. Really interesting people, it must be said. So I enjoyed that yesterday. So there you are. Right, just a quick roll call and then we'll jump straight into the front pages of the papers. Hi to Ad Hominem, to Gail Hominem, to Gail, to Anonymous in Western Massachusetts, to Shash 1108, to Paul Birchall. How you doing, Paul? And for some reason, I'm offline. I'm not offline streaming, but this device here just won't show me the live chat stuff. Why won't it do that now? How weird. How very weird. Let me just change from Wi-Fi to 4G. 4G, eh? 4G, eh? 4G will be a thing of the past real soon, won't it? Let me jump in there and go back to the chat. Yeah, I think I might be back in the chat now. So let me just say a quick hello to Dan Dez, to Susan Wilson, to Lee Dignam. How you doing, Lee? Lee says, I think a huge false flag will be coming soon so that all the attention will be on that rather than this Prince Pedo being on news. Just my opinion, says Lee, but that's how it works, says Lee. You see, it must be said, while the allegations against this guy Andrew are very serious and must be investigated, and the women who have made them must be listened to, for certain, they're allegations. And regardless of what we might think about any man or any woman, and their background and their status, everybody must be considered innocent until proven guilty. And I'm not going to wink when I say that. I really believe that. I believe that the guy has some very serious questions to answer. I also believe he will never be compelled to answer them. As I speak with you now, Adam Bolton on Sky News and a number of guests are speculating on whether or not Andrew will have to go to the United States to answer questions. No, he won't. So Lee, I'm not saying that you're wrong when you label the guy as you've labelled him. Don't jump to any conclusions. Sure, God knows I've said enough about these people on my own radio shows. But proof. We know Jeffrey Epstein was a paedophile. We know that he was enabled by people like Ghislaine Maxwell. And we know that Prince Andrew was a very close friend of his. These are damning things if you happen to be Prince Andrew or any of his family, his daughters or his mother or his father. These are damning truths. What did you know? What did you see? Did you see? Did you know? Did you turn a blind eye? Or did you willingly participate? These are serious questions. And I talked a lot last night about Louis Mountbatten and revelations about him, which came to light recently, at least came to light in terms of the mainstream media, but many of my guests and colleagues and former colleagues have known all about Louis Mountbatten for many, many years. It's a cesspit. It really is. Hi to 2-6, to 4 Jam Lions, to Jack Woolley. How you doing, Jack, in Australia? How you doing? A lot did happen in the time I was off. Hi to Rose Williams, to Kippy, to Jason Williamson. How you doing, Jason? To Threta Glumberg, to Martin Ellen, to Una Munro, to Matthew Hughes. Lovely. Let's move on. To Jason Hurley, to Jesus Jones. Let's go on. To Susan May, to Daz. The call-in was a refreshing change yesterday. I'll try and include more phone-in shows as we go on. To Charlotte Binns. Good morning to Jean Ann there in Cleggan in Western Ireland. on the West Coast there. Good morning, our kid. To Mr. Sin, how you doing, mate? Thanks so much for the donation there. To Sir Hubert, to Brian Little, to Ian Hilpus, to Carlos Kruger in Montreal. How you doing, Carlos? In Montreal. Bonjour, I would say there. Philip, let's see. There's somebody posting with a pyramid with an all-seeing eye. Avatar. You're a moron. Just thought I'd say that. Hi to Carl Rayner, to Ethic Boxing. In fact, what I'm going to do now is, let's go. Done. Job done. Gone. Hi to Kinnell. That'd be Cocobell. How you doing, Cocobell? To Zoran Nedimovic, who's in Melbourne. Did I say that right? Nedimovic or Nedimovic? Nedimovic. How you doing, Zoran? To Sean Mack. And to Harvinder Rishiraj. Have some compassion for Andrew, says Harvinder. He's been long-term unemployed. He has. He's been sucking from the public teat for a long time now. Right, I'm going to jump straight into the papers then. The front pages anyway. And they're very Andrew-centric. They are very Andrew-centric today. Have I got them? Have I? Should have them. Let's make them look like a list. View as list. Good. Move them to one side so I can see my ugly mug here. And we'll start with today's Daily Mail. At least we'll try to start with the Daily Mail. Yeah, there you are. Andrew's accuser. He knows what he has done. Epstein victims, of course, speaking out yesterday in New York, had a lot to say about Jeffrey Epstein, and some of them had a lot to say about Prince Andrew. He knows what he's done. And he slept with me when I was just 17. And he must answer allegations under oath, say lawyers in New York City yesterday. But will he answer allegations under oath? I would venture that he won't. Or if he does, some secret backroom deal will be brokered between these people and Andrew, whereby he might answer some questions, but there will be a script, there will be a narrative, and he will walk away from it unscathed. Don't think or imagine for a minute that there will be any meaningful examination of this man without it being controlled in a way to make it look like, for the public anyway, to make it look like that he's willing to answer questions. Because that's what might happen. But I would venture, I would be surprised if he does end up in New York City sitting at a table answering questions. But if he does, don't think for a minute that it'll be uncontrolled, that it will be off the cuff. So there you are. That's what I think. Anyway, so it's in all the papers today. The Sun goes with it. Andrew knows what he's done. Same headline. Epstein case accuser hits out. Let's move on from that because, as I said, it's everywhere today. Pretty sure it's in the Metro. He knows what he... Again, lawyers want Andrew, the royal, to answer multiple questions. There are pictures, of course, in all the papers of Andrew with the woman concerned. In the iPaper... The Eye paper goes with the opposition parties coming together to try and block a no-deal Brexit. Jeremy Corbyn led. We'll come to this in a minute. Julia Hartley Brewer, who presents for Talk Radio, has got an interesting piece in today's Telegraph newspaper. She is a one-time Telegraph journalist. She used to write for them full-time at one time. So that's the Eye paper there. Okay. Let's see. The Times, Johnson accuses Corbyn of sabotage over EU talks. The UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is saying that Corbyn's timing, gathering other party leaders and other party MPs, gathering them together to form a group that's going to look into how they can stop a no-deal departure on October 31st. Johnson is saying this is basically sabotaging the talks which are ongoing. And up to this point, Johnson has been saying, hasn't he, that the talks are very positive, and I'm pretty sure that we can find an arrangement that we can agree on to enable us to leave on October 31st. That arrangement, of course, would not be really leaving the European Union. But anyway, so we might come back to that as well. Also on the front page of the Times, Prince Andrew knows what he's done, says Epstein sex victim. There's also a story about drinking red wine and how it might be good for your gut and for your figure. Yeah. In moderation, maybe. Here's the Express. PM lays down the law to EU leaders. The Daily Express, which is a pro-leave newspaper, alleges that Boris Johnson is coming off all tough and hard and brilliant in the negotiations, and that he's dictating the terms to the leaders of the European Union. He isn't. Don't believe it for a minute. But that's what the Daily Express is going with today. It's also going with the Epstein story as well. What is interesting is while the British media cannot ignore the Jeffrey Epstein Prince Andrew connection any longer, the media here cannot ignore it any longer, so it is going with it up to a point. Politicians, especially feminazis, should I use terms like that? Probably not. I don't see anybody as feminazis. But people like Stella Creasy, MPs like Stella Creasy, Walthamstow MP, who wants to emasculate men. Right? They haven't been seen, have they, in the last few days? Have they? Am I doing them a disservice? Have Luciana Berger and Stella Creasy from Walthamstow and all the women who want to make misogyny a hate crime, they want to make it a hate crime to hate women. If you hate women, it's a crime! And if you do anything to a woman, if you whistle at her on the street, if you catcall her, if you use terms like love, that's all got to be legislated for, according to people like Stella Creasy. So where are they now? You would have thought that Stella Creasy would be leading the calls for Andrew to go to America and to face his accusers. Are they? Am I doing Creasy a disservice? I might well be, and if I am, I will apologise. Where are they? Where are all the virtue signalers of politics saying, well, a lot of women have accused this guy Andrew of being in the room. A lot of women have said that that they were forced to participate in sexual activity with him. So where are the politicians saying, get him on a plane? Get him on a plane. The Telegraph, Javid warns there will be no blank checks. This is the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Sajid Javid, saying that in the event of a no-deal Brexit, government departments better not expect copious amounts of money to help them cope, to help them deal with the no-deal Brexit and the fallout from that. Javid is saying there isn't a big pot of money available. Social media and body image are making our children the unhappiest for 25 years. That's on the Telegraph. That is an interesting story. And Epstein's first British victim, of course, that story again covered in the Telegraph today. It's covered everywhere. The press is realising that it can't ignore it. Right? Politicians, nowhere to be seen. The Guardian. Nothing in The Guardian about Jeffrey Epstein. Corbyn puts confidence vote on the back burner. One of the things that Jeremy Corbyn has in his armoury is to table a vote of no confidence in the government, the Prime Minister. According to The Guardian, he's not going to do that anytime soon, possibly because he doesn't have the support of enough Conservative Party backbenchers, you see. Okay? And the DUP, of course, is unlikely to support any motion of no confidence either. So there's a story about education in The Guardian. I'm going to leave that there and ignore it. Hang on now. This is all going quite well, isn't it, for the first one back? It's all going quite well. No screw-ups yet. Very dark. It's very dark in the room. Our world is in meltdown, says the Daily Mirror. Children are playing in the sea in a 22 degrees Celsius heat wave, but not in Skegness, not in Cleethorpes, not in Blackpool. No, in a town 700 miles north of the Arctic Circle. It should just be 8 degrees there now, but ancient glaciers are vanishing. There's a global rise in sea levels, and it will hit Britain. Everybody must read it. The Mirror, today, our world is in meltdown. It's just the weather, is what it is. That's all it is. It's just the weather. Do you want me to move on from that? Let's move on. Not getting into Greta Thunberg or Thunberg, however you pronounce it, and the Extinction Rebellion. I'm not getting into it today. I'm not getting into it today. Because I don't want to. Hi to Ted Watts. How you doing, Ted? Let me just go back through a few of these. Because what happens is they scroll on down. Sean Hinchcliffe hates women. They're a pain in the arse, says Sean. Richard Murray says it's the same hypocrisy, Richie, as the Creasy types. Stella Creasy. Utter silence on certain traits of Islamic culture's attitudes towards females. That's a good point, Richard. It is a good point. Well said. Hi to Jim Bob Jr. To Nick Farrell, to Turkey Listener. How you doing, Turkey? Hi to Liz McFall. How you doing, Liz? Robert Muldoon, Kevin Anson, Fred Luce. A dog 420, a dog. David Stevenson. David, thanks for that. I've got a story on that about the video cameras outside Jeffrey Epstein's cell. Would you believe it? You're never going to believe it. But the video cameras outside Jeffrey Epstein's cell, well, they weren't fully functional. I bet you could have been knocked down by a feather there. Like all those video cameras on the Champs-Élysées. And all those video cameras outside the tunnel on the night in 1997, yeah. All those video cameras, yeah. Oh, be Jesus. Ah! Huh? Good to be back. Jean Ann says, I feel a bit sorry for Her Majesty, don't you? That's dripping with sarcasm from my old friend Jean-Anne Crowley. Bad enough waking up to Diana, but you'd think at 90, whatever she'd be waking up to Andrew on the front pages might finish her entirely. Don't bet on it, Jean-Anne. They don't use the same doctors we do, these people. They don't take the same medicine. Yeah. Any chance Andrew will die mysteriously? I doubt it very much. I doubt that very much. Let me go on down. Carl says, any evidence either Epstein or Madam Maxwell worked for Mossad rather than allegations? That's a good question. I've said 1,000 times that I suspect he was working for intelligence agencies. Yeah, I've dropped in Mossad. MI6. The NSA, the CIA, they're all the same, really. You'd have to suspect that because the houses were wired for light and sound, wasn't just so that Epstein could later on watch the videos and whack himself off to utopia. Maybe he was wired for sound and light and vision and audio and everything else because people were being blackmailed. Hi to Yarlin Zay. Rob Monty. We go on down there and then I'm going to go back to the tellies. Right, to the tellies, to the papers, to the dailies. We had the Mirror then. Here's the Star. Shampers Cork blinds Love Island star. Medicine mix-up turns 16 kids into werewolves. Did you see that story yesterday? The children looking like teen wolf there. Jesus. That's the tabloids today, isn't it? Shampers Cork blinds Love Island star. Guy opens a champagne, bottle of champagne, gets whacked in the eye. That's front page news for the Daily Star. Good stuff. What else have we got for you then? Yeah. Video cameras outside Jeffrey Epstein's jail cell are unusable. And they are too flawed to be used by investigators probing his death. Another security lapse from the troubled Manhattan prison. Another troubled lapse. Broken bones in his neck. I tell you, of course it's not beyond the bounds of possibility is that when you tie a noose, a rope, sheets around your neck, and you hoist yourself one way or another, or you step off a bed or a chair, it's not impossible that you will break bones in your neck. But what I found through my own research is that it is unlikely. It's a guarantee when you have a drop of several feet, and it's a guarantee when a skilled hangman or hangwoman or executioner measures your body weight and determines the necessary drop to crack the old vertebrae, render you dead. Yes, bones will be broken, but it's not very likely that Epstein would have broken bones in his neck. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. But you know, you would have thought that this prison in Manhattan, with the notoriety of the case, with the world media interest in Epstein, you would have thought that the men and women in charge there would have said, while Epstein is in our custody, let's not screw this up. We can't fuck this one up, folks. We can't. So we're not going to fuck it up. This guy is not going to be left on his own. We're never not going to have a pair of eyes on him. They abandoned him for over a half an hour. Then he was found dead. The cameras are not working. Oh yeah, that's the one. Be Jesus. It's not yet clear if the problem with the video camera is an isolated issue or an ongoing problem at the facility. The latest in a series of apparent failures at the prison. Yeah. Oh yeah. The FBI and the Justice Department Inspector General's office are attempting to determine what happened in the lead up to the 66-year-old's death and whether any prison policies were violated or whether any crimes were committed. The Washington Post is the source for the Daily Mail today, and the Post says that surveillance gathered from the hallway outside his cell can't be used, but there is some clearer footage of the area that is available, but just not outside his cell. Or on the doors leading to the to the corridor, maybe. Mad Ted. Yeah, the Times is all over this as well. Again, Prince Andrew knows what he's done, says his victim. This is Virginia Roberts, of course. There she is. And that's in the Times. Again, let's keep that one in mind. The newspapers can't ignore it. UK politicians struck dumb. Particularly the feminists in the Labour Party. Nothing to say. At least I can't find anything, as I've said. Yeah. Really good stuff in the Times today. Really good stuff. Hi to Brian Little. Surely any decent doctor would know from his injuries if he was murdered. It's not easy to determine whether he was murdered, Brian. The coroner said there were broken bones in his neck. The coroner isn't certain that he hung himself, but that's all the coroner can say, really. They can't determine anything else, you know. So there you go. Hi to Mark Simich as well. Hi to People's Poet. Yeah. Maximum security prisons with faulty cameras. It is a bit bizarre. All right. Some very interesting things in the Times today. Nanotech jab lets mice see in the dark, and we could as well. Very interesting stuff, this. In the Times, transhumanism, of course, massive topic, massive area of interest for you and for me and for the guests on the Richie Allen Show. And it's a subject I'll be exploring in the autumn in great depth. Researchers who injected specially designed nanoparticles into mice found the mice could see in the dark, and basically, if we can do it with mice, we can do it with people. Who wouldn't want to be able to see in the dark? Who wouldn't queue up to volunteer firstly and then later on, laterally, to say, yeah, I'll pay. If I'm going to pay hundreds of pounds for the latest smartphone, and you might pay £700 or £800 for an unlocked brand new smartphone. You'll get it, in theory, for free if you get it through a contract with O2 or Vodafone or Three or Carrefour and Warehouse or whatever, in theory, but you're still paying hundreds of pounds for the phone over the contract. So we're prepared to pay hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds for the phones. Would you pay £2,000 to have a procedure that can be done under local anaesthetic, where a nanoparticle is injected into your brain that enables you to see in the dark? I'm willing to believe most 30-somethings and 20-somethings will say, give it to me. Yeah, yeah. I can't afford it, but I can get it on credit, can't I? Can't I? 2% interest, what you reckon? Yeah, and you'll get the nanoparticle. It's no joke, this. No joke, Elon Musk. Oh, he's lovely, isn't he, Elon? Giving away all the technology. Yeah. They'll queue up for it. People will queue up for it. You know. Get people addicted to Marvel and DC movies. You can't go to the fucking cinema today at any time of the year without being subjected to a massive budget film, because they're not films, they are crap. Marvel or DC show about people with extraordinary abilities. Superhuman people. So now we have, hey, imagine, you'll see in a few years' time, you'll have a Marvel comic, because Marvel comics are not in the past. Stan Lee might be dead, but there are writers constantly writing stories and new characters. So you'll have films in the future, characters with special abilities, and presumably you will have advertisements before and after the films for clinics where you, the consumer of the film, will be able to go and get your super ability of your choice. I know it sounds mad, doesn't it? It's a stretch, Richie. I'm telling you, it's coming. This is how they sell it. But see in the dark. Who wouldn't want to see in the dark? I wouldn't want to see in the dark particularly. No. Not without the aid of some electronic old pair of night vision goggles that have got a battery, if I ever needed to see in the dark. But I don't want somebody sticking a electron in my brain to enable me to connect to the old Oculus to supercharge nerve endings to enable me to see in the dark. No. Because obviously a third party will be able to access that chip. This is everywhere. I discovered this is everywhere. In the last couple of weeks. Here's a very interesting story. Now this, I'm using Kent Live, but I could have used anything. It's a couple of weeks ago. Hopes that brain implant will help crush yearnings for food among morbidly obese. Now it's not just the morbidly obese, it's the addicted in general. The alcohol addicted. The drug, well, alcohol is a drug. The tobacco, which is a drug. The smoking addict, the drink addict, the cocaine addict, the junk food addict. And soon, the social media addict. We'll come to that in a minute. Put a chip in your brain and addiction gone. Because we can control the urges, you see. We can even do it remotely. You know? Don't worry about the chip not working, because we'll be able to monitor it in real time. So if there's any sort of malfunction, any sort of problem, we'll be able to just go get right in there. A responsive neurostimulation system was developed by medical technology company NeuroPace to treat people with epilepsy. Once implanted in the sufferer, it records brain activity continuously, records it, and delivers a mild electric shock whenever detects a specific pattern of activity. It's designed to stop a seizure before it begins. So they believe that this can also be used to recognize cravings and addiction and to suppress them. It's mad stuff, this, right? Because Let's jump into the children's story. In the Times, children blame social media and Love Island as unhappiness grows. Britain's children are unhappier. Are unhappier now than at any time in the past decade, according to a study. Found boys are becoming increasingly more insecure about their appearance and so on. So it gets into this. It links addiction to phones and to social media and how it's making people depressed and fed up. This is all about dopamine. Dopamine, the chemical which is released in the brain when stimulated. Pleasure and all of that. We've had people on the programme over the years who've talked about how when we get addicted to things like pornography, for example, online porn, how after a while the same old porn that you watch doesn't quite give you the same rush, the same dopamine release anymore as it used to do, and you go seeking out more and more extreme things to see to replace that dopamine release that you're not getting anymore, and how ultimately that leads to sadness and depression, right? Right. You see, it's happening to children who can't stay away from Facebook, from Instagram, from Twitter. And I know there are a dozen other social media platforms which I'm not aware of because I don't watch them or use them, I should say. And that's what's happening with children. So they can't get the same rush, the same pleasure. Doesn't release the endorphins, the dopamine. I know I'm being very general here with the terminology, but there are a number of brilliant studies done by some very good men and women at Harvard, for example. Like this one, Dopamine, Smartphones and You, A Battle for Your Time by Trevor Haynes at Harvard University. Look it up. Dopamine, Smartphones and You. And don't think about you because you're obviously an adult. I hope, Larry, you wouldn't be watching this otherwise. Think about your children. Will somebody please think of the children? This is a brilliant study. And there's loads of it. Let's get rid of that. Right. How addiction hijacks the brain. Let me just bring you a little bit more of it now. Have I got that? I have. Right? Battle for your time. Question your habits. It's very, very, very good. Dopamine, Smartphones and You, A Battle for Your Time. Don't think or imagine that the people who designed this technology, if they are people, were not aware of the transformative effects it would have on your brain. And the physiological changes have been witnessed under MRI scan, haven't they? We've talked a lot about this. That's what it's doing to children. So it's creating children who, as they get older and they spend all their time on social media, become more and more fed up, introverted, introspective, mildly depressed, needing medication because the dopamine levels change and the rush and the pleasure is diminished over time. They can't replace it and they don't know what to do. And I think it's by design. Okay, I'll get somebody on the show real soon to explain that better than I could explain it. Somebody who understands what's actually going on here. So, yeah. It is no surprise to you or to me to hear today the children are less happy than they were some years ago. I'm 44 years of age now. Of course, when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, of course I wasn't playing with a smartphone or a tablet. I was outdoors in all weathers. I was outdoors. I was playing sports, right? I was running around the fields across the street from my home. I was out till all hours playing the games that kids used to play. Games like Tag, Manhunt, copy with the days. Running around with other children. So yeah, very, very serious stuff. So Julia Hartley Brewer then is writing in the Telegraph today, and the People's Parliament, dreamed up by Jeremy Corbyn, with the help of Joe Swinson of the Liberal Democrats, that's her on the left there, and Sarah Wollaston is the woman on the right. She joined the Lib Dems too, didn't she? As far as I know. Brewer is asking, where did the term people come from in terms of when did we start attaching peoples to everything? You know, the people's vote, the people's march, and so on, so on, so on. And she reckons the use of peoples is basically to try and sanitise what's really going on, which is a coup against the people of the country by those who refuse to accept the democratic vote of 2016. It's a coup, she says. And it's an outrage for anybody to suggest forming a people's parliament to head off leaving on October 31st to basically revoke Article 50 and to overturn the democratic vote of 2016. So she's properly pissed off here. It's a good article in the Telegraph. Sadly, you must subscribe to the Telegraph to read it, but it's very good. It's a Remainers Parliament, she said. It's the latest explosion of outrage by those who wish to thwart Brexit as they feign horror at the prospect of Johnson, that's Boris Johnson, using executive power to suspend Parliament to make sure we leave on October 31st. She goes on to accuse the BBC of being complicit in this particular coup, does Julia Hartley Brewer. That's in the Telegraph today. It's very interesting. We might get into some of it tonight. We've got Jordan on, in theory, tonight. So there you go. Yeah, what else have I got for you? Dina Blyton thing is funny. That's running and running. The Royal Mint, back in 2016, deciding that they wouldn't commemorate Enid Blyton on a coin, on a 50p coin, because of her opinions, because of some of the things she wrote during her career. She's the seventh most successful author of all time, the most successful children's author of all time, and has sold about 700 million books, Enid Blyton. And she won't be on any coin anytime soon. Yeah, I talked a bit about this yesterday. It's not new, because this is happening quite a lot, as we know. It's happening quite a lot, you know, lately. We've got to remove this. We've got to apologise. University or universities in the UK apologising for links with slavery and all of that. But none of you were alive at the time. None of you had anything to do with it. The university is unrecognisable now, obviously, to the one in the early 20th century. So what are you apologising for? What are you talking about spending money on reparations for? To who? Who are you giving money to? The slaves are dead now, as are their children and pretty much most of their grandchildren. Who are you going to give money to? This is the madness. This is the lunacy. And there was a guy, there was an academic on Good Morning Britain yesterday, Kehinde Andrews, Birmingham academic. He's a black lad, smart fella. And to be fair to him, he said, I'm not advocating banning Enid Blyton's books, but that's where it inevitably leads. It inevitably goes there, that we say that these books now are beyond the pale. We can't have our children reading these books, lest they be tainted by the ideas and the opinions of this woman, Enid Blyton, who's been dead now for God knows how many years. Decades, right? And I've read all these books. They're hugely valuable. She talks about the Magic Faraway Tree series, which is an amazing series of children's books, by the way. But I've read all the books Blyton wrote, even the ones that were targeted at girls, like Mallory Towers. I read those series. There's 6 books in all, I think. Maybe there's more, the Mallory Towers. I can remember the characters' names. Alicia and Daryl and Gwendoline Mary and Mamselle Dupont and all the characters. Mamselle Rougier, the French tea. I remember all this stuff. I read all these books when I was younger. Read all the girls' books. And I think there's great value in these books. There's a lot to be learned in reading these books from a time when children didn't run around with phones and smartphones and gadgets. A lot to be learned. You know, it's been said in the last couple of days that Blighton was intolerant, she was homophobic and she was racist because of the use of the term gollywog, because of Noddy and big ears. I've not read much Noddy, but I understand that the characters are very sympathetic characters if they are gay. So I don't see any bigotry there. But these stories about children working together, even the fantasy stories about children solving crimes like The Secret Seven and The Famous Five. But you've got the Mallory Terror series about the schools. And it's not so much about authority as it is about children getting on with one another, working with one another, putting up with one another despite one another's various idiosyncrasies and quirks and all of that. I think there's great value in those books. So you'll get to the stage where people will say, we can't have children reading these books anymore. We've basically got to decommission them, if that's the word you would use, decommission. Get them out of print. They don't have any value anymore. We have different values and morals in the 21st century. We'll have to remove these books. That's where we're going to end up. It is very, very worrying. So it's not a throwaway story that's a bit funny. It's very serious. Enid Blyton was a genius. Whatever her political opinions were, whatever she thought about homosexuality, she was a genius. And her books about children, and children being together on their own, exploring the world, having adventures, getting into crazy situations, going to school together, cooperating with one another, are brilliant. And it would be a devastating loss, I think, if they were to be, as I said, decommissioned or whatever. Right, I'm going to love you and leave you because I'm going to go. It's coming up for 10:15. I'm going to get changed now into a pair of fetching shorts and I'm going to go for a run. Jean-Anne Crowley has just said, Blighton taught generations to love reading. And that's a point, of course, that I agree with and I should have made there. Yes, abso-bloody-lutely. I couldn't wait when I was a child, when I was given my first couple of Famous Five books, and I found out at the back of the book that there was 21 of them. Holy shit! And I've only read two. What about the rest of them? And then you read the rest of them, and then you see, also by Enid Blyton, The Secret Seven, The Mallory Towers, The Magic Far Away. Oh, get them, get them! And you read those books, and as a child then you realise that there's nothing better than being with a book, with a real book, with a hardback book or a paperback book that's been well read maybe by somebody else. That's a thing of beauty. A book that's seen a bit of life, that five or six people have read and they've loved it. They've loved it so much they've passed it on to somebody else. And you never loan a book, children. Unless it's very valuable, of course, in which case you don't loan it. But if it's a paperback, you never loan it. If it was brilliant and you loved it, give it to somebody and tell them to pass it on. Absolutely right, Jean-Anne. She taught children to love reading. And I went through my teens then, reading everybody. Everybody. Wilbur Smith. I read a lot of fiction in my teens before I got into non-fiction. Everybody who was popular. All these books about the Courtney family in Africa. I suppose that's racist now as well, the Wilbur Smith books. I read all that stuff. Robert Ludlum. Obviously, Ian Fleming, read it all. Couldn't get enough of books. And Irish authors, of course, as well. Then you get into plays and playwrights. Then you get into biographies. And you love books. Absolutely bloody right. Blighton got children into reading books. And I believe that if today's children... Because I downloaded... I know it's ironic. To my tablet. I've got a tablet for the show. I don't use it much outside the show. One of the Mallory Towers books some months ago, just to take a trip down memory lane, and I downloaded a Famous Five book. Well, I'm going to think of it. It's doing my brains. And which one was it? Billy Cockhill, was it, or something like that? It might have been Finiston Farm. It might have been Finiston Farm, right? And I'm reading them. And okay, I'm 44 years of age, but I didn't think they were dated in any way. Obviously, it's a different time, right? There are some very interesting words in these books. But I didn't think any child today reading it, much as I might not be able to put my mind into the mind of a 7, 8 or 9 year old, but anyway, I didn't think any child reading those books today would find them boring, dull, uninspiring or unimaginative. It'd be brilliant to have children reading those books today. But anyway, right, I'm back today. Jordan Maxwell, apologetic for his no-show yesterday, has assured me he'll be with me today. So I look forward to that. We'll have a news roundup as usual. The Richie Allen Radio Show will be live at 5 o'clock on the usual channels. Thanks for bearing with me this morning. I really appreciate it. That's it. How many times do we say goodbye to you, Irish? Eh? We say goodbye a lot of times. I will speak to you at 5. Bye now. Bye.